Up next, Tuesday's press conference at the State Department with State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert.
Okay, just one announcement to start today. Sometimes we have many, just one today. It's summertime. You would think it would be slow, but it has been pretty busy here. First, I'd like to highlight some good news for the State Department this past week. Yesterday, President Trump nominated the following eight career members of the Senior Foreign Service to be ambassador. Michael Peter Peltier was nominated as ambassador to the Republic of Madagascar and the Union of Comoros. William Moser of North Carolina to the Republic of Kazakhstan. Robert Scott for the Republic of Malawi. Craig Lewis Cloud to the Republic of Botswana. Michael Kletsky to Mongolia. In addition to them, we also have a few others. Judy Gail Garber to the Republic of Cyprus. Donald Armin Bloom to the Tunisian Republic. And finally, Dennis Hankins to the Republic of Mali. We are proud of our work in growing our team in the 3 months since Secretary Pompeo took leadership of the building. We continue to make steady progress with full White House support. We hope that the members of the U.S. Senate will work quickly to get these nominees through the process, along with additional nominees. Some of you may have noticed a few weeks back, the White House also nominated four career ambassadors to that post. That is the highest rank that a Foreign Service officer can achieve. Since 1955, just 59 career ambassadors have been nominated or have been named. David Hale, Philip Goldberg, Michelle Sisson, and Dan Smith are those current nominees that the White House has put forward. We look forward to the Senate now being back in session and hopefully moving our folks along quickly to get our team on the field. And with that, I'd be happy to take your questions.
Just on that, Heather, do you expect that this week?
If any of our ambassadors would be voted upon this week?
The career.
I'm not sure. That's up to the Senate. So we'll see what happens, and we're looking forward to getting our folks through, and they'll hopefully get through.
Okay. I want to ask you about a phone call the Secretary had yesterday with the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia. Mm-hmm. The readout of the call mentioned several topics, but it didn't say specifically whether the Secretary had raised with the Crown Prince the attack in Yemen for which we talked about last week, mm-hmm. which the death toll of children has now risen to, I believe, 50. Nor did it mention the whole dispute between the Saudis and Canada. I'm wondering if you can elaborate a little bit on the readout and say whether either of those two items came up.
Yes, both of those issues did come up in the Secretary's call with his counterpart. We put out a readout of that call, but as you will notice in the readout, it says that we also discuss other issues of mutual concern. We don't always, as we've talked about here before, list every single thing, every single item that has been discussed in the phone call, but I can confirm for you that those two issues were in fact raised.
All right. So, I mean, because they were like relevant items, and thank you for confirming that they mm-hmm. were, but it would have been super helpful had that been mentioned in there. It's not like, you know, we're not talking like zombie apocalypse as a mutual.
I think we have a new job for you, Matt Lee. You can come in and you can do our readouts calls.
Can I ask you to be a little bit more explicit mm-hmm. in what exactly they? Mm-hmm. I mean, did the Secretary say we're concerned about this attack, this bombing in Yemen, and we'd like you really to find out what happened? I noticed that General Mattis has said that there's going to be a U.S. general going over to Saudi Arabia to, I don't know what, but to have something to look overlook or do this. And on the Canadian dispute. Did he say anything to suggest that the United States agrees with the Canadian position that these rights activists should be released?
Let me take your second question first, and that is to the issue of the dispute, or whatever you want to call it, between Canada and Saudi Arabia. The Secretary believes that this is an issue for the Canadians and for the Saudis to resolve themselves. We said that last week. I think we've been clear about that. We believe that other countries have the ability to pick up the phone and have conversations with one another about issues that are important. The United States does not have to get involved or interfere in every issue that's out there before countries. As to the second issue, we addressed this last week. We have called for a Saudi-led coalition to investigate the civilian casualties that took place as a result of that airstrike. Secretary Mattis has spoken about this. The secretary dispatched a three-star general to Saudi Arabia to discuss the incident with the Saudi government and encourage them to look into the situation. As of a few days ago, the Saudis have said that they would, in fact, conduct an investigation. And so we will let them certainly conduct that investigation. We're not going to get ahead of that, but I can confirm for you this is an issue that the secretary did raise, but I'm not going to get into the private details of their diplomatic conversation. Hi, Andrea.
Yes, sure. Two questions. First of all, since last week, the Canada-Saudi issue has escalated with Saudi taking retaliatory action against investments in Canada. So I'm wondering whether there is a further response from the U.S. to that, because it's no longer being resolved between two friends. It's not at all being resolved between two friends. And on Yemen, what would make us think that the Saudis could credibly lead an independent, lead a coalition-led investigation?
Well, they've done it in the past.
Rather than an independent
They have done those investigations in the past. We call upon them. We call upon them to hold an investigation. Secretary Mattis sent out a three-star general. That three-star was there, my understanding, today, in which he was having conversations with the government of Saudi Arabia and coalition partners. And so I'll leave it to that investigation to take place, and part of this would be would require having DOD weigh in.
You don't think the UN should step in?
I'm not going to make policy here from this podium. That is not my role to do so. I can tell you, I can state our current position, and our current position is for an investigation to take place, and that is all I have that I have on that matter.
One question to follow up on that, though, is: was there an attempt to obfuscate the subjects in that readout? Because the readout notably did not mention the two very newsworthy mm-hmm. and very controversial issues now involving the kingdom.
Look, there is, you've been around long enough to know that every single issue, and we've discussed this here before, that is discussed in a phone call between two world leaders does not make it into a readout. That is part of the reason that I am here today to take your questions, and I can confirm that those issues did in fact come up, and I'll leave it at that. Does anyone have something on another matter?
Okay.
They probably did, because they do exchange pleasantries when they talk.
I just wanted to clarify something. You said that you want to leave it to Canada and Saudi Arabia mm-hmm. to resolve their issues. Does that mean that the United States will not mediate or interfere or try to bring them together? They are allies, right? They both are allies.
They are partners. They are friends. I think we'll leave it to those countries to resolve this themselves. Okay? Hi, Lori.
Hi. I've got an Iraq question, a Turkey
sure.
question. Iraqi Prime Minister Abadi has said that Iraq will continue trading with Iran, but it won't use the dollar. What is your response to that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen that report. That's something that was just brought to my attention a short while ago. Overall, I can tell you we continue our efforts by the government of Iraq and the Kurdistan Regional Government to resolve issues between the government and Baghdad. You know our concerns about Iran and about trading with Iran. And we will continue to hold countries accountable for any violation of sanctions.
But is his statement acceptable to you?
You know, Laura, you know, we've been here long enough together that we don't comment on every foreign leader's comments that a foreign leader will make.
Okay, on Turkey, there's a crisis. Are you having any discussions with Turkey on this during this crisis, or are there not even talks?
Well, I think you saw yesterday where National Security Advisor John Bolton met with the Turkish ambassador to the United States. They had a meeting. The White House put out a readout of that conversation. And we continue to have a conversation that was similar to the previous conversations we've had recently, where we talk about areas of mutual interest. Not all of that makes it into the readout. But we also talked about the issue of Pastor Brunson.
And is there any news on that?
I have no new news for you on the case of Pastor Brunson. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, thanks. On that subject, White House officials are saying that there was no progress made, that, mm-hmm. that it remains at a stalemate. So from the State mm-hmm. Department perspective, what is the next step in trying to resolve this Brunson
issue? I think progress is having Ambassador Brunson on a plane coming back to the United States, I'm sorry, Pastor Brunson, coming back to the United States. We hope to have him brought back very soon. We have long said that that is long overdue. We look forward to that taking place. I can tell you that our chargé in Turkey visited Pastor Brunson earlier today. He provided a brief readout of that where he basically just discussed the fact that they met. I can just tell you our conversations continue, and I don't see that changing at this point.
Okay, and on the Saudi issue...
I'll come back to you. Somebody else had something on Turkey.
Yeah, if we nominate someone to be an ambassador, might that be helpful to have an ambassador in post? I know this is not...
I'm glad you brought that up. One of the things that's very important to the secretary is putting his team on the field. And he spent considerable effort in putting people on the field, interviewing people, spending his personal time doing that, really digging into the details. And, of course, also encouraging the Senate to move through our people just as quickly as possible as they're able to do so. I don't have any information on any new nominations that would come out of the White House, but I would imagine that the secretary has a candidate in mind for that. Let me get to Leslie. I haven't met Leslie yet.
So
she's supposed to be number two. So
I am. I noticed.
She's number one.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yes. Forgot about that. Thank you very much. So there's no negotiation going on about Father Brunson and Pastor Brunson and the other Americans that are going. I mean, from what I gather, that you've told them you release Pastor Brunson, or are we going to take further action?
I'm not going to forecast any kind of further actions or what our next steps will be, other than to say conversations continue. We've been very clear with Turkey about our expectations and our desire to have our people brought home. Pastor Brunson gets the bulk of the attention in the news and from a lot of folks, but it is just as important to us to have the NASA scientists, Sergen Golka, brought home as well as our three locally employed staff who've been working at our mission in Turkey and then have been detained for quite some time as well.
So if I can look at the broader perspective, a bilateral issue between the United States and Turkey has now roiled emerging markets. We've had everything from Mexico to India, the currencies from all over the developing world have been affected by this. At what stage does one stop this so that, the rest of the world doesn't sink to the bottom of the economic pile?
Well, I think what we're seeing overall, and I'm not an economist, of course, but economists would certainly tell you that what is happening in Turkey goes far beyond the United States and the United States' recent policies and impositions of various policies and mechanisms. The economic woes did not begin when we put in place those global Magnitsky sanctions on two individuals on August the 1st of this year.
Can we go back to Saudi Arabia for a moment?
We'll just close out on Turkey before we finish the next thing. Go ahead.
After the meeting today, does state have an update on the condition of Pastor Brunson and whether or not that's playing into these discussions at all? Is health?
I don't believe his health status has changed in any way. I know that our chargé was certainly pleased to see Pastor Brunson.
Okay. Heather, I just wanted to know, have you seen President Erdogan's comments today about a boycott of American electronics?
I have seen that. I can't confirm that is actually going to happen. We've seen those press reports, and I would just have to refer you back to the government of Turkey for any additional clarification on that.
Presuming he's not lying and he's going to go ahead with this, I mean, do you have any concern for the impact of this, or is this kind of like the same thing as him saying that we're not going to buy toasters anymore?
I think we would wait to see if that is a policy. So we're just going to wait and see on that one. Andrea, and then we'll move on to something else.
Yeah. According to Chairman of the Council of Economic Advisors, Kevin Hassett, the sanctions that we imposed on Turkey amount to about 0.001% of their economy. So it's a tiny, tiny amount. Erdogan is blaming all this on America in big rallies in the West. Mm-hmm. Should Erdogan look inward at his own economic woes? And do you have any concern for the safety of Americans, tourists, and others? Is there a travel warning?
I don't believe our warning or our travel advisories for American citizens traveling in Turkey have changed in any way. We can check with consular affairs. That latest information would be on our website. So I would encourage folks, if they have questions.
You don't know if anything is in the works.
I'm not aware of anything changing, anything in the works, but I would encourage folks, as we know a lot of people are traveling in the summertime, to always take a look at our website at any country you're interested in going to. And if I can put in a plug for my consular affairs colleagues, and that is, please, if you're traveling overseas American citizens sign up for our STEP program. In case of an emergency, if we should need to reach as American citizens, we will know how to reach you so we can help you if we do, in fact, need
just
to reach somebody. Yeah, yeah. Okay, hold on. You have one. Yeah, yeah.
After the meeting today, the Chargé released a statement saying that the U.S. calls for Pastor Brunson's his release without delay and in a fair and transparent manner. You've previously called for his immediate release. Do you think that Turkey could immediately release him? Because they continue to say that this has to go through their justice system.
We've been very clear with the government about our expectations in our meetings and in phone calls. This is nothing new. Our policy has not changed in any way. Okay. Hi, Saeed. Okay, let's
follow up on an issue that I raised last week.
Sure, and
which is the aid to the Palestinians.
Okay.
There was a report that came out on Friday after the briefing, which said that basically the United States cut off all aid to the Palestinians. Could you please just explain to us the situation, the status of USA to the Palestinians?
Yeah, I can just tell you that much of this is under review, and we have no decisions to announce, no new initiatives or anything to announce at this time.
So do you confirm that everything is frozen? Most everything is frozen,
that
with the exception?
Funding such as for UNRWA was under a review. That remains under review at this time. Okay. I don't have anything more on that.
Go back there. A couple of people had questions. When you call for an investigation, why does the United States think it's enough for this ongoing problem for Saudi Arabia to do the investigation?
That is something that they have done in the past, and we would encourage them to continue to do that. Michelle, I'm not going to have anything more for you on this issue.
Well, why do you think it's enough was the question?
Because we take those matters seriously of civilian casualties. Our Saudi partners take those issues seriously as well. Anyone who operates from a military fashion, who is involved in actions and strikes, in strife around the world, in major countries like ours, take all efforts to try to mitigate against civilian casualties. And I'll just leave it at that. Hi, go ahead.
Okay, so back on Saudi,
I think I just said I don't have anything more for you on this issue.
This is not on Yemen.
Okay.
The Saudi Canadian spat started with the arrest of Salma Badawi, who's an activist, over her online social media posts, and her brother was arrested several years ago on the same thing. What's the U.S. position on her arrest?
Sure. And this is something that we've and good to see you back here. But this is something that we've addressed here from this podium before. We support the right to free speech. And that is something that we stand firmly for every time one of these issues comes up. We remain concerned about the detention of activists in Saudi Arabia, and we urge the government of Saudi Arabia and all governments to ensure that due process is done and that it's handled in a transparent and fair manner. Okay? Okay, let's move on to something else. Hi, Jessica.
Another question again, just about the Canadian issue. What was the purpose of the call? If it's not to offer support for one side or the other or to offer a negotiation, why raise it with the Saudis?
Well, I think that was in our readout. And we have broad relationships with many countries around the world in which we are engaged in a lot of various activities, some of which you're very familiar with, that you read in the headlines every day. Some things are not as interesting. And so we have often have broad conversations with our partners.
Do you think the U.S. could take a role as a negotiator going forward?
I don't think that there's any it's not necessary for the United States to have to step in between two countries that have the ability to pick up the phone and handle these issues among themselves. Okay? Okay. Hi. How are you?
You've probably seen or heard that Iran's spiritual / revolutionary leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, has said that there won't be any talking with the U.S., or in general, he has forbidden talking with the United States. Given that the administration has expressed openness to discussions on all the subjects, would you consider this Iran's response to that proposition?
Would we consider that to be Iran's response? I mean, we certainly heard the response. The United States remains hopeful that that the people of Saudi Arabia will continue to make their viewpoints very well known. Excuse me, sorry. Thank you.
People of Saudi Arabia should not continue.
Pardon me. Okay, I get going on autopilot there. Thank you for that correction. Very much. My apologies. You know, look, we heard the statement, and it's just something where we're not going to respond to something that every government official from around the world has to say. I think we've been very clear in terms of our policy regarding Iran and our concerns and our continued concerns about Iran's bad behavior around the world. We are not the only nation to have seen that, witnessed that, who have been hurt by it, many other countries as well. And we remain, you know, firm in our policy of standing up against Iran, against its malign activities.
Is there going to be a deadline for a response?
Look,
from
I'm not putting out any kind of deadlines or anything. I think we've been very clear about our policies.
Be able to speak up for themselves.
Yes, we
too,
do support. Right? We do support free speech. Korea. My sincere apologies, Ms. Farhat.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Heather. South Korean media reports that the United States and North Korea held working level talks at the demilitarized zone last weekend. Can you confirm this? Who were there? What was the agenda? Was it about Secretary Pompeo's next visit to Pyongyang?
Yeah.
And is the United States planning another meeting with North Korea this week?
We have no meetings or no plans and no travel to announce at this point. Regarding your question about any previous meetings, I don't have anything to share for you on that matter. But negotiations and conversations between our government and North Korea will become sort of a regular course, part of our regular course of business, where these will be normal. We will have conversations, we will have meetings, we will have correspondence with the North Korean government as we look to denuclearize North Korea.
Follow up to
yeah.
that.
Last
Follow
one.
Up to
then,
that. Yes. How does State Department feel about declaring the end to the Korean War at this time, when North Korea is not making any specific denuclearization actions?
Mm-hmm. We support a peace regime, a peace mechanism by which countries can move forward toward peace. But what our focus is, our main focus, is on the denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula, and that's something we've been very clear with many governments about. Okay? Kylie.
If these meetings are going to be made normal, mm-hmm. then why can't you tell us when they happen?
Well, sometimes we will and sometimes we won't. I mean, you know, we don't read out and announce every single diplomatic call, every conversation, every meeting that we have with other governments. Some will read out and some we won't.
And there are some reports from those who have been briefed on the negotiations that they haven't gone that well, and that specifically Ambassador Sung Kim wasn't treated very well when he's gone there. What's your reaction to that?
I think I would say that that's news to me. Okay.
All right. At this point, does the State Department feel that it's important to appoint a replacement for Joseph Yoon's position?
As I've said, the secretary has made it one of his top issues to get our team on the field. And we are working hard every day to bring new people. I look forward in the coming days and weeks ahead to making further personnel announcements, not specific to that necessarily, but in general, I can tell you we look forward to additional personnel announcements. Okay. Hi, Cindy.
Heather, on China, as you know, a VOA correspondent and another freelancer were detained yesterday in China for several hours and had their equipment scanned and everything. Are you concerned that this is part of a broader crackdown on free speech and human rights in China?
Well, we've been watching that very carefully. And you and I think, had a one-on-one conversation a few weeks ago about the disappearance of a professor who was being interviewed on Voice of America, and he was taken away by security officials in China. And then the follow-on story was that a Voice of America reporter was detained along with a contractor, who I believe was also working for Voice of America, was also taken away. And that detention is a concern of ours. We understand that they were released, but nevertheless, that detention is a concern because they were speaking freely. They were doing their jobs. And we continue to support people who are engaging in doing their jobs, telling the stories about what is going on, not just behind the scenes, but reporting on daily life for those in China and elsewhere as well. We are concerned about what we consider to be China's suppression of fundamental rights, including freedom of expression and freedom of association. And we call on China to allow all individuals to express their views without fear of retribution. and for journalists to be able to do their jobs without interference. Okay, and we're going to have to wrap it up.
The president of Taiwan spoke yesterday. It's the first time in 15 years. The government and the U.S. government has previously discouraged them from coming here to speak. Was that done with the State Department's approval? Are you glad she came and said what she did on U.S. soil?
Yeah, I mean, first let me start off by saying our policy on Taiwan has not changed. The United States remains committed to our U.S. One China policy based on three joint communiques under the Taiwan Relations Act. The United States, in regard to this trip, facilitates from time to time representatives of the Taiwan authorities to transit the United States. Those are largely undertaken out of consideration for the safety and comfort of those travelers, and that is in keeping with our One China policy. For any additional details about the President Tsai's visit, then I would have to refer you to Taiwan authorities.
However, in the past, Taiwanese have come here and have been discouraged from speaking, and there have been talks about it regularly in previous visits. And so this is a big change. Would if she transited Washington, would you be happy if she spoke here?
Well, that would be entirely a hypothetical question, so I just don't have anything for you on that.
But this is a change in policy.
Yeah, I'm not aware of it being a change in policy, but from time to time, they do transit through the United States, and that is something that is in accordance with our One China policy.
Can I please ask a question about
China? We've got to wrap it up. Nick, go right ahead. We've already covered Turkey. Nick, go ahead. Last question.
Quickly, North Korea, Ambassador Bolton said last week to a few of us, North Korea has not taken effective steps to denuclearize. I'm not saying for you to respond to that specific phrase, but does the secretary share the ambassador's frustration? And I know you can't talk about specific meetings, but in general, are the meetings yielding any progress?
Yeah, well, I think we have certainly seen progress so far. We've seen the remains of service members brought home. That is certainly a step in the right direction. We've had conversations with a country that we hadn't had one-on-one conversations with for many years. We're opening a dialogue. We're in a very different position today than we were just over a year ago, much less 6 or 8 months ago. So we think that that is progress. Is there quite some room to go? Yes, there is a way to go on this, and Secretary Pompeo has been very clear about that. But we continue to have those conversations because Chairman Kim has committed to President Trump that they are willing to denuclearize. And so we will continue in full good faith effort to have those conversations to move forward with that policy objective.
And any progress in the last month?
We consider meetings, negotiations, conversations as we move forward behind the scenes with those negotiations to be moving in the right direction.
And
last question.
Has there been any progress on denuclearization to wit a declaration of what they have?
I don't have any announcements to bring you today. I'm not saying that there hasn't been progress. I'm telling you I don't have any announcements for you today.
No, I'm just asking.
When we do have something significant to announce, you probably won't be hearing it from me.
I hope we are. But I'm just saying, I just mean how, aside from the remains, which is significant and moving, and we've been covering that, has there been any progress on the issue of denuclearization?
And those are conversations that we are having behind the scenes. I'm not going to get ahead of those conversations, and I'm not going to read out those conversations. I can tell you that conversations with the government of North Korea are becoming a far more normal matter. And that is exactly why we won't be reading out every detail, every time we meet with them, every phone conversation or email that we exchange with them. Okay. We continue to work in good faith to move forward on that. Okay?
Far afield. One is, do you have anything to say on the six-year anniversary of the disappearance of Austin Tice in Syria? And secondly, I don't remember if you guys said anything at the time late last week when the Cubans returned this fugitive to the United States.
I'm afraid, Matt, I don't have anything for you on the Cuban return of this individual. I will check with our folks who handle Cuba and see if I have anything I can get for you on that. Regarding Austin Tice, some of you may know him. A U.S. citizen and a journalist who was reporting from Syria and went missing 6 years ago to this day. I know his parents have been speaking publicly about how much they miss him. about the U.S. government's response to address his disappearance, his location, and attempts to bring him home. We believe him to be alive. We remain deeply concerned about his well-being, and we're actively working to bring Austin Tice home. Now, I imagine a lot of you will have questions about where we think he might be, who you think might be holding him, et cetera, et cetera. I appreciate your curiosity about that, but that is not something that we will get into out of not only consideration for the family, but his own safety and security. We hope that we will have a positive conclusion to his case at some point soon. And while I raise this issue, I'd like to just mention, as some of you know, we have a special presidential envoy for hostage affairs. I think many of you have probably not met him. His name's Robert O'Brien, and he will be working on this issue, along with the cases of other American citizens who are missing or who have been held, or are being held in other countries.
Is he based in Washington?
Yes.
O'Brien, is he based in Washington?
I know he works out of Washington, yes. I don't know where his actual home is. Hi.
Parents today have called for the United States, for the U.S. government to hold direct talks with the Syrian government to bring him back home.
Yeah.
Are you willing to do that, perhaps have the new special envoy?
Sure, I hadn't heard about those comments that his parents had made, so that's not a question I asked. I can't make policy here from this position and determine whether or not we should actually have those kinds of negotiations going forward. I would hesitate to say that I understand the parents' pain and the emotion that they're feeling, not knowing where their son has been for so many years. As a parent myself, I can certainly appreciate part of what that must feel like. I can assure you that we're doing everything that we can to try to bring him home. And our conversations, certainly with the family, will continue. Okay? I've got to go, guys. Jannie, I'm sorry. I'll see you again next time, okay? Thanks.
And now we go from the U.S. to Russia, where on Wednesday, Maria Zakharova, the spokesperson for that country's foreign ministry, did her weekly press conference.
I just addressed the participants of the youth forum here, and now we'll have our regular briefing here. We'll cover some political matters. And I would like to start this briefing considering that we are in Kaliningrad. I would like to start by saying something about Kaliningrad's international and interregional ties. The unique geographical location of Kaliningrad region means that it plays an active role in Russia's international ties with European partners. Kaliningrad region is one of the leading provinces in the Russian Federation in terms of the number of international contacts. This helps with direct dialogue with the nations of Europe, the policy of openness and good neighborly relations. As an example of such successful cooperation, there was a year of Germany in Russia and the year of Russia in Germany for regional and municipal partnerships recently. Also, four matches of the World Cup took place in Kaliningrad in June this year, and over 100,000 foreigners visited the Kaliningrad region. Drawing from this experience, the region will now host other international major sporting events. For example, on October 11th, Russia will play Sweden as part of the UEFA Nations League here in Kaliningrad. The Kaliningrad region makes an important contribution to our interaction with the European Union as part of the international cross-border cooperation between Russia and the EU, Russia-Poland 2014-2020 and Russia-Lithuania 2014-2020. Despite anti-Russian sanctions, the amount of international trade in the Kaliningrad region is growing. Commerce with Poland and Lithuania is increasing. To attract investors to Kaliningrad region, in 2018, the Oktyabrsky Island in Kaliningrad will become a special administrative district with special tax benefits. In recent years, the Kaliningrad region has been working actively to create the legal framework for the facilitation of doing business and providing government support for investment development of the region. facilitating access to energy, facilitating environment regulations and the visa regime. E-visas will now be used for people living in the Kaliningrad region, similarly to the one used in Vladivostok. Also, one of the cities in the Kaliningrad region was used as the site for the Baltics Arctic summer camp. So we really thank Kaliningrad for hospitality. And just recently, the Caspian summit concluded. It was an effective international meeting. We are happy with the results. All the countries, the experts of all these countries have been working for a number of years to prepare the Convention on the Legal Status of the Caspian Sea, which was signed in Ottawa at the 5th Caspian Sea Summit, sets up a mechanism for five-party consultations between foreign affairs ministries of the five Caspian Seas states. We had a lot of questions about this new instrument and when the next meeting will take place. So the presidents gave instructions to their governments to have the first meeting of foreign ministers no later than 6 months after the signing of the convention. The foreign ministers of the Caspian Five have decided to set up a high-level working group before the end of this year. The exact location and date of the next meeting will be coordinated through diplomatic channels. The International Organization of Turkic Culture has proposed to declare the year 2018 the year of Chinggis Aitmatov, whose 90th anniversary we mark this year. As you know, the books by Chinggis Aitmatov have been translated into 176 languages, published in 126 countries. This means that the Soviet and Russian cultural heritage continues to bring people together, including in the former Soviet republics. Chinggis Aitmatov also has a symbolic role for our ministry as well. As we all know, Chinggis Aitmatov served as a diplomat since 1990. He was a Russian ambassador to Luxembourg, and from 1994 to 2006, he was Kyrgyzstan's ambassador to Belgium, the Netherlands, and Luxembourg. We invite everybody to take part in a flash mob, Chitaim Aitmatova in Russian, or read Aitmatov in English. Please read out portions of his books and then upload your videos on social media. We hope that this initiative will encourage young people around the world to read the books by Chinggis Aitmatov. So please go on social media, use those hashtags. We know that young people like all those things related to online, to the internet. Now we hope that this instrument will be really helpful in raising awareness among young people. As far as books of Aitmatov are concerned. I really hope that young people, not only in former Soviet republics, but also around the world, will discover the books by Chinggis Aitmatov. for themselves. Find something important, find some wise answers to eternal questions in his books. Next, we go on to Syria. The situation in Syria is steadily improving because of successful actions by government forces in southern Syria with key support by the Russian Air Force. Hotbeds of terrorism in the provinces of Deraa and Quneitra have been completely eliminated. Also, the operation evacuating so-called irreconcilable opposition groups and their families have been completed in Deraa. The last group of 452 people left last Sunday. In the last 2 weeks, the Syrian government forces were able to liberate 2,000 square kilometers of Syrian territory. Refugees keep coming back. Last Monday, 204 refugees came back to Syria from Lebanon, including 61 women and 104 children. As far as internally displaced persons are concerned, over 316 Syrian citizens have returned to their homes, including 189 in the province of Homs, 85 in East Ghouta, and 42 in Deir ez-Zor. In 117 towns of Syria, refugee centers have been set up for 490,000 refugees. Also, in 295 towns, work is underway to set up infrastructure for accommodating refugees and internally displaced persons for almost 1 million people. In just the last 24 hours, I'm referring to August 14th, 16 houses have been repaired in Syria. 1 kilometer of roads has been repaired, and 1.5 kilometers of electricity lines, power lines, has been restored. In the town of Hirjila, outside Damascus, there was a humanitarian event. 3.7 tons of food was distributed, and the Kadyrov Foundation distributed 1 ton of bread in the area of Sheikh Said. Russian military doctors have provided medical assistance to 6 people, including 3 children, in the town of Salhiyah in the province of Deir ez-Zor, and also provided medical services to 54 people, including 16 children, in the settlement of Yalda outside Damascus. Demining continues in the province of Homs. 2 hectares of territory has been demined, including 10 buildings. 50 explosive devices have been defused, including 21 improvised explosive devices. Now, a few words on the so-called White Helmets and the evacuation operation. We noted reports in the media claiming that the United Nations Refugee Agency and Human Rights Council were somehow involved in the process of evacuating the White Helmets. Unfortunately, the office itself confirmed these reports on its official website. So essentially, the UN supports the misinformation campaign in Western media regarding the White Helmets, painting them as fearless humanitarian workers. We would like to point out and ask why. Why are these heroes not staying in Syria, even though the situation is now peaceful there? Why they are not distributing bread? Why they are not rebuilding medical posts, infrastructure? Why do they leave? Why they're not thinking about children who need to go to schools? Why they're not thinking about civilians? Why are those humanitarian workers fleeing? No, it's just because the only purpose for their existence was the circulating fake news, fake stories about chemical weapons and promoting this propaganda online, spreading misinformation on the internet, claiming that government forces allegedly used some chemical weapons. This is the only thing that the so-called White Helmets did. We would like to point out that the United Nations refugee agency should pay closer attention to its reputation and what it does in Syria. We remind everybody that the White Helmets are spreading misinformation. They use humanitarian aid as an excuse, as a cover-up. In fact, these people represent extremely dangerous terrorist groups, and their only purpose is to belie the efforts by the Syrian government forces and Russia in fighting terrorism. They're cynically spreading fake stories about Russia's efforts to improve the situation in Syria, including providing assistance to refugees. So any support provided to the White Helmets by the UN refugee agency is a grave mistake. There is an expression we all know that such serious mistakes are actually more than mistakes, and we all know that they're extremely dangerous. We encourage the UN refugee agency to avoid political bias and remain neutral, focusing on the task which is the number one priority today, namely bringing Syrian refugees back to Syria. You know, we know that there are international organizations supporting the White Helmets. And when we talk about refugees returning to Syria, people who want to come back to Syria, somehow nobody wants to help them, nobody wants to support this process. They say it's too early, the situation's too dangerous. Sounds funny. When people, when those people were in Syria, and many regional countries and international powers sponsored militants, the situation was not dangerous. And now when people return to their homeland, they say the situation is too dangerous. That just sounds absurd. But facts speak for themselves.
Now we turn to the investigation into the killings of Russian journalists in Central African Republic. As you know, Russian Foreign Ministry have said many times that we are closely following the situation around the probe into the circumstances surrounding the killing of Russian journalists on the 30th of July. Now we are considering to send to the Republic members of the investigative committee of the Russian Federation to follow and monitor the investigation conducted by Central African authorities. Some mass media have said already, and I can only confirm that, that Russian journalists have arrived to the Central African Republic representing different outlets. Also, Federal News Agency project is being developed there. On the 12th of August, a number of journalists arrived there during the meeting with the embassy personnel. And I'd like to confirm that those who are arriving to this place, to the Central African Republic, they are doing that constantly, maintaining dialogue with the Russian embassy, and we do hope that all journalists, Russian journalists planning to visit this state will be informing in advance Russian embassy there, Russian ambassadors. Also, that should be done when it comes to the informing of the Russian Foreign Ministry. So please inform the relevant authorities and Russian embassy as well. So we only said that their goal was to cover the work of Russian instructors in Central African Republic, visiting the training base in Berenga and following the route their fallen colleagues didn't make. So security of the Russian journalists has been ensured by the local police and UN peacekeeping mission personnel as well. Russian diplomats in Bangui also facilitate their work and their investigation. We sincerely hope that the professional work of journalists will make it possible to add to the clearance of that fog around the circumstances surrounding the killings of Russian journalists and torpedo and debunk the innuendos and fake news that emerged in various mass media outlets and on the internet regarding what really happened with Russian journalists there, their objectives and why they were there at all. Also, that will put an end, we hope, to many speculations regarding who is behind that killing. That, to our mind, is going to be a complementary factor which would facilitate the investigation conducted by the Central African authorities and Russian relevant bodies, which was launched immediately after the incident. The whole picture will be presented by the official investigation conducted again. I'd like to say that by the Russian and Central African relevant bodies, but certainly journalists will contribute to that process and to its results, letting everyone know the truth about what really happened to Russian journalists. Now, I would like to turn to the Russians who have been kept prisoners under trumped-up pretext, and that is Mary Butina. She was arrested on the 15th of July in the United States, and trumped-up charges of reportedly acting as an action of a foreign government were pressed against her. And you know the consequences. Russian diplomats in Washington succeeded in securing better incarceration conditions. Now she can use telephone, she has better food now, but at the same time, despite multiple requests, the regime of her incarceration is quite a severe one, which resulted in undermining her health. It seems that they are trying to complicate her life as much as possible and force her in that way to cooperate with the investigation. We think that such actions of the U.S. are inadmissible. We demand that she is given full medical help immediately. And also, the United States should put an end to that criminal action because it is has been started on charges which were put out of her head. I can't say nothing else. What they say stands to no criticism. Now we turn to Kirill Vyshinsky, as the Russian embassy in Ukraine has the Kherson arbitrage court agreed to reduce his time under investigation and prison, and now he'll be kept for less than 60 days. At the same time, they refused to let him go. Our embassy personnel are being denied the opportunity to meet with Russian citizen. We still continue to monitor the situation closely, and we facilitate as much as possible the defense actions of the team which helped him. On the 27th of August, and that is a very forthcoming news, we will be celebrating the 100th anniversary of Latic Poach Service. So, you know, that day will come in a couple of weeks, so it will be the exact date, but we can say it at this very day that 100 years ago, the Russian People Commissariat for International Affairs created the Diplomatic Poach Desk, which was responsible for ensuring secure and confidential messaging with Russian representatives abroad. Well, it's a bit too early to congratulate our colleagues, but we are ready to do that, and we will do that later on. But here, on the eve of that wonderful day, I would like to say a couple of words about the diplomatic courier service. It is a very important link in the diplomatic chain, because they are responsible for the safety and protection of secrets of state. And the most vivid example of heroism exercised by Russian deep couriers is the one done by Theodor Nettern, Jürgen Mechmastil, who back in February 1926 were delivering diplomatic poach from Moscow to Berlin, coming through Riga. On the 5th of February, they were attacked in a train. The goal of that attack was to get the poach away from them. There was a shootout. Theodor Nettern, resisting the bandit, was killed in action, while Jürgen Mechmastil lived to tell the tale. He had three wounds, but he kept under his protection the poach until he arrived to Riga. Both were awarded the Order of the Red Banner. Streets, vessels, and aircraft were named after them, and even a film was screened to honor their memory. It will be screened on the 27th of August by the Zvezda TV channel. Their feat of valor and courage back in the 1926 is not something out of the ordinary. That's just an ordinary life for those who work for that service. Throughout the Second World War, diplomatic couriers were sending and carrying mail across the front line using Russian and Allied aircraft and vessels to do that. Lately, they've been delivering poachers to the countries immersed in conflicts and bloodshed, such as Afghanistan, Mozambique, Lebanon, Syria, and other places. The memorial plate dedicated to the following foreign ministries of personnel, and you know that it's stationed in the hall of the foreign ministry in Moscow, sees one-third of all the names belonging to diplomatic couriers. Throughout these 100 years, it lived through many structural and functional changes, but it never lost its high professionalism and reliability of people who have been serving for 100 years, changing one another on this past. Now we have radio and internet, but still, diplomatic service is as important as ever. It's one of the most reliable ways of delivering messages, documents, papers. The successful completion of that service depends on the talented personnel. They have received a lot of state awards, diplomas and certificates. Many of them are now consuls, they are heads of departments, they work in international organizations. Starting from the year 2003, this is a separate department of the Minister of Foreign Affairs, Department for Diplomatic and Courier Connection and Messaging. We have a lot of other ministries relying on our couriers. Currently, we are sending our couriers to over 120 states across the world. I'd also say that now the department has been headed by Sergei Lukyanchenko, envoy, extraordinary and plenipotentiary. And the next briefing will take place in Moscow. And on the 23rd of August at 11 o'clock, we will be opening a themed exhibition to celebrate the 100th anniversary of the Russian diplomatic service anniversary. And during that briefing and before it, we will allow the accredited journalists to visit the exhibition and, well, prepare some reports and stories relying on that material we will be giving you as per that exhibition. It will be a wonderful event, I promise. There you will see the very diplomatic luggage and bags used for delivering messages, and you'll be told about every aspect of courier's life and work and service. If you cannot come, we will be posting everything online.
You're listening to Weekday World on CPR, CommunityPublicRadio.org. I'm your host, Don DeBar.